Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Hello and welcome to IMP's WWE Adventures podcast on the Social Suplex Podcast Network. Help the network out by leaving us a 5-star review. Also, give a donation directly through Red Circle and become one of the amazing community by joining the Social Suplex Discord. Link is in the description. Listen to the other top-notch shows here on the Social Suplex Podcast Network, One Nation Radio, Keeping It Strong Style, All Things Elite, Wrestling Art Chris Things, Trish and Sarah, Tunnel Talk, and the AEW Match Guide. It's a full schedule of awesomeness. My name is Matt Mayer, aka Imp, and this is your quick look back at the WWE week that was 30 minutes in the aftermath of the Vince McMahon Netflix documentary that came out this week. I'm recording this on a Thursday. We got a certain thing happening on the Friday. Hopefully I can get this out beforehand so that I can do a little bit of notice for anyone who listens to this being like, eh, we're all going live. It's 11 PM BST, so it's 6 PM America time. just to figure it all out. We've got Australians as well, it's a nightmare. But we are going to be doing a big announcement for the network, so it's everybody. Yes, you're going to hear One Nation Radio alongside Tunnel Talk, alongside Keeping It Strong Style, alongside Trish and Sarah, alongside me. And the whole point is everybody's going to be there. So please do check that out. In terms of my week, I've got the SmackDown notes, I've got the Raw notes, and then it's Vince McMahon stuff. But the Vince McMahon stuff is the biggest stuff, so it kind of feels like we need to start there. Unfortunately, in time for me recording this, I've only watched 3 episodes at the time of recording this. I've not got the ability to just sit there and watch 6 hours straight of a documentary that came out yesterday. Don't have time. But it's one of those documentaries which it definitely went more into things than I was expecting. The biggest fluff piece at all. It's not quite like that. It is a little bit of a Bad Man Gone type of vibe to it. So, like, it's one of those documentaries that would be so interesting just to watch with a normal person who isn't wrapped up in this wrestling bubble. Because, of course, we all know all these stories beforehand. So it talks about Superfly Jimmy Snuka. And it's like, okay, we know this story. And then it moves on to the next thing. It's kind of just like, especially in a post-Dark Side of the Ring, where we've actually deep-dived into those stories and seen the effects that those stories had on the families of the people who were involved in these things. Like with Jimmy Super Snuka, we've got a whole episode seeing the ramifications that that caused in that girl's family. In the documentary, it's kind of just like, Jimmy Five Super Snuka, he might have murdered this girl. And then you just move on. And it's kind of like, if I'm watching that as a normal person, is it just like a barrage of all of these scandals and things where it's one of those where it's so many that you don't actually have time to get emotionally attached to these other ones? Just very quickly blast by a few of them. And that was just one example where it mentions it, and then we move on. It's like, whoa, wait a second. Wait a second. Because there's just so many scandals. I just wonder as a normal person who doesn't know any of these things. And you like wrestling? I think that's the other thing. That's the vibe that I was most surprised about. It 100% doesn't feel like the kind of documentary you make if you're trying to get people to want to watch wrestling. If you come out of this documentary, I'll be so surprised if the reaction isn't more like, why do you watch this stuff when it's like that? Why do you watch it? If anything, it makes the arguments harder to say why you continue to watch in spite of all of this stuff. For that, I kind of commend Netflix because it's not the out-and-out hit piece that it could have been harder hitting, 100%. But it also could have been way softer. And the fact that the actual vibe from what I'm getting from so far and from the people I've talked to who have actually finished it, because they're crazy. How do you watch 6 hours in a day, you crazy people? It's that feeling of it doesn't really create that vibe of, oh, I really want to get into this wrestling thing that's coming to Netflix. even though there's a little bit of a vibe of, ah, but that's all things of the past, that's all gone now. Like, it's the wealth of our history, but also we're not that anymore, we're this new thing. And that's what's coming in January with our new stars, with our new creative team, with our, all of these new people. All the people from the past, yeah, none of them are there. So just ignore the fact that Bruce Pritchard is. none of them are there. You get some new information. If you are a wrestling fan, you'll know everything that's in there. But the thing that I'm most happy with the documentary is they did a very good job of just letting Vince hang himself with his own words. They did the same with Bruce Pritchard, where the phrase I saw on Twitter was, they SpongeBobbed him, where he was just talking about how he didn't show off Vince's humanity side. I think this just feels like a hit piece. And then it does the 2 days later, and that's when all the lawsuit breaks, which is no grant. And it's like, yeah, Bruce, yeah. But it's interesting, because when you watch the documentary, for me, it becomes very, very clear which voices you shouldn't be trusting at all. Ones you can trust a little bit, or whatever, because part of the documentary is teaching as well that you shouldn't really trust anybody who says anything in wrestling. And Vince McMahon is always performing. Even the ones you kind of side with a bit more, like Tony Atlas, they're always performing and kind of giving you what they think you want to hear. Like, you will never see the real Vince McMahon, even in this stuff, where it's the Vince McMahon he thinks he wants you to see, or it's the him trying to create the legacy he wants you to think his legacy is. Like, he's trying to create it himself, because this was all before all the stuff came out when they're doing the interviews. And I'm also impressed with the production value of it as well. Some of the talking heads are like, really, you got that guy? Like, really? And Dave Meltzer is obviously great, but in terms of, like, if there's any kind of world of person that will be able to kind of pick up and notice, it's podcasters who will be able to pick up as, like, well, this person, like, he came out talking really well. I was like, I mean, the way they're edited. I mean, like, the editing for Dave Meltzer really makes him look like the funniest guy sometimes. When it was like, oh, they've said 93,000 for WrestleMania 3 so many times, they probably believe it themselves. And an amazing comedic timing with the edit as he just filters through all of the Vince Voigt kiss asses. Going, oh man, 93,000 to Hulk Hogan. Oh man, 93,000. Very specifically, like 93,178. No one else did that. That was just Hogan. The most Hogan thing ever, to give the most, to make it try and sound really by giving it a very exact number. But yeah, Vince as well saying the 93,000, and then there's Dave Meltzer like, yeah, it's 78,000. It is a documentary which feels like it's edited very well, it's produced very well. It's not for us, it's for the more normie kind of people. There's a lot of things in there where you feel like, ah, they've either glossed over it, or they've not gone into the specific detail because they don't want to try to create a certain narrative, and this kind of somewhat affects that or whatever. They don't try and make Vince like a good guy. They don't try and paint him as a tortured genius or anything, which was one of my worries. The other note was seeing that there was like, oh yeah, WWE had no hand in that. Obviously, the news coming out that Vince tried to purchase it, stop it going. I was like, yeah, this isn't good for Vince. Like, or him saying that a lot of the stuff he does is for business. He contradicts himself so many times in the show, and that's why it's so good to just let him hang himself in his own words. When Vince is talking about how Ted Turner was stealing that wrestler, Ted Turner was buying out that wrestler, he was coming after me personally, he was taking him down, he was a big billionaire, taking down my family business. And then the other head talking heads is more like, I mean, that's what he wanted to think. There's a reason he didn't say it was Eric Bischoff, who was the actual creative person doing all this stuff. Like, there's a reason he used Ted, so he could, like, build this sympathetic babyface character. He does a really good job kind of explaining that. Like, what you're seeing here, it's still an act. So he does a really good job of conditioning you to then, when he cut back to Vince, to be treating what he's saying there in a similar way. As you watch the documentary, your relationship as a viewer with Vince changes. So that's why I'm interested to see how a normie deals with it. Because he may just at the start just treat like, he's a bit sleazy, but he's also a talking head, so maybe what he's saying is the truth. But as like a wrestling fan, you've got to step ahead of them. It's kind of help. But the show does a really good job of conditioning you to stop trusting what Vince says. And some of it's jokey, like with the Dave Meltzer thing, being like, that's just a company line, they're lying. But the ultimate one is in the Screwjob episode 3. I've been talking about Ted Turner stealing the talent. And the actual Netflix interviewer just outright, I guess it works quite well as like a conduit for the viewer, where he just asks a normal question, trying to pop the Vince like wrestling bubble world that he's created and been able to operate in for so many decades. Just a normal person asking a normal question, being like, that's exactly what you did in the 80s. That kind of works if long form, you're just letting him hang himself with his own words, and that's kind of what this did. Like, you poked him a little bit, but you didn't press him on it, because you've got hours left to record. you need like 10 hours of content to record, and who knows what hour this was filmed in. But to poke it enough to have him say the words, and then in editing you can just, because you're interviewing other people as well, you're not basing all of this on what Vince says. It's an interesting watch, because obviously whilst it was being made, whilst interviews were being done, it was for one purpose of reframing, for instance, Vince's legacy with one final thing of, this will be the story of what Vince's legacy is going forward. Then the scandals come out, one after the other, with the hardest hitting being like months from the show being fully edited and able to go out. Like, the interviews are conducted in 2022. It's a show that hits all the beats you're expecting it to. The story it's telling is like, this is kind of a sleazy guy, right? And you shouldn't trust a single word he says or any of his cronies or kiss asses. Like, it's very easy to pick out which ones are just going to tell whatever lie that Vince has come up with for whatever the story is, and that's the world, whatever. The show does a really clever way in the editing to tell you which one of those people it is and which ones to kind of not really trust 100%. And the ones that get out the best of it, like Dave Meltzer looks really good. Tony Atlas looks good, but I don't know how much of Tony Atlas is kind of doing the same thing just the other side of the coin. Like, I don't know how much of Tony Atlas is telling the interviewers what they want to hear, and I watch Tony Atlas like, no, this generally happened and I'm just fine talking about it now. Like, I don't know which one it is. To be fair, it's wrestling. It's probably a mixture of both. Dave Meltzer is the guy that when somebody says something that makes no sense, he explains it to the journalist. This is why they're saying this thing that makes no sense. Or he'll explain it and then it clicks together a little bit. They give like a historical context. Like, they're all lying about the attendance figure. Why are they lying about the attendance figure? Dave Meltzer then explains it and fills in the gap. So he comes out of this documentary really well. But also, everyone sounds like a really competent speaker. Like, I've heard Vince McMahon speak on a live microphone Monday Night Raw. The way he sounds in this documentary, he is nowhere near as fluent and coherent as that when he talks. He's sometimes really difficult to understand. However, in this documentary, I had subtitles on, which is the final point I want to make before I move on to actually covering the shows. Throughout this show, sometimes you'll hear somebody reminding him of something off mic, but he is still pretty fluent and coherent in his thoughts when he's talking about something. However, that's for me, that's the sign of how good the editing is, to soundbite him, essentially, and make him sound really coherent is what he's saying to help the stories flow. But it's one of those where I just get the impression that, that probably means he wasn't that coherent. The one time you do hear Paul Heyman off camera just saying, oh, what about this, Vince? Or just reminding me of a story that he just maybe generally forgot about. The final note, they're saying that WWE had little involvement in this. There were little WWE-isms that they're notes of production that are just strange. Like with the Vince McMahon had loads of them. Like, you can't say the words professional wrestling, you can't say hospital, you have to say emergency facility. Like, there's just all of these weird things that are just strange. One of those things shows up in this show, and that is every single time somebody says WWF or World Wrestling Federation, the subtitles read WWE or World Wrestling Entertainment. Every single time. Somebody did that. Somebody, whoever wrote the subtitles, did that by hand. They typed that out. They made sure every single time somebody said WWF or World Wrestling Federation, the subtitles read WWE and World Wrestling Entertainment. And that is such a WWE-ism. A note of production, that's just strange. Because they're not saying those words. Why does it matter in this context that it says WWE? Why does that matter? It's like, it's not that complicated that partway through the documentary, the company changes its name. Like, you know it's called WWE now. It's a WWE-ism. And for me, it's little notes like that. WWE weren't that involved in it. It's more of like a big Netflixy type of thing. I was like, but there are notes. There are notes of WWE-isms and production things just in there. And that's one of them. Like, why is that a thing? Does any note of production that makes you go, but why though? That just makes you scream, okay, what was the actual involvement? Because in what world would Netflix give a crap that the subtitles say WWF instead of WWE? Why have they changed them? And that is so strange. It's so strange. Anyway, that's the Vince documentary. I've not finished it. Maybe I'll have deeper thoughts once I've actually finished it. But I'm somewhat impressed with the way that they subtly tell you, maybe this guy's a bit, instead of just outwardly saying it. The actual information in the doc, if you're watching it for the information and new juicy stuff, like this, that's not for you. On that kind of way, it's more for the average Netflix viewer where this comes up and it's like a heavily marketed and pushed thing. My mother, who only watches like crime shows and things, who generally can't tell the difference between a show from the 90s in a 4-3 ratio where everyone's got gelled hair compared to a new show, she generally can't, she would have no idea she's watching an old show. I don't know how. I don't even know how that's possible. I just know that it is. Even she's getting recommended the Vince McMahon show, where they are pushing this on Netflix. They're pushing it pretty hard. Also, there will be normal people who watch this. I'd be interested to see what their take on it is. Anyway, let's jump on over to Sacramento, California. I did have like some notes about SmackDown, but I've had to rededicate time to the Vince stuff. So we'll talk about the important things. Obviously, there was one thing. There was a lot of hype before the SmackDown show aired. There was a lot of talk about what it was going to be. Let's jump on right into it. The Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns face-to-face.
Your stadium. You know what's on the other side of the stadium? Right over there?
What's that?
Techwood Studios. Down the street. Center stage. Just that away. What we used to call the Omni. Now State Farm Arena. Multiple generations of my family have bled for the city and in the city. You played football here. Thank you. And then you went back to the beach. This is your field. But this is my home.
That's very good.
Shot all properly on the Atlanta, Georgia football field. It's called a football field in America, right? I've become accustomed to AEW producing this sort of filmed segment, but it's awesome to see WWE step outside their usual production box and take a big swing like this. Look what they can do with genuine time and effort put into something, especially when they're using it to try and push those top stars on that whole other pedestal. If you've seen it, especially with like the Darby Allin stuff, or they'll film a special entrance for the Hangman Page stuff, they'll use this kind of production. I feel like it's something special, or it feeds into a character like Darby. But they never used it to essentially transition a promo that would be in front of fans to then have for that to have high production. It just means that you can play certain notes that would never work in front of a live crowd, where you're sometimes playing for a reaction or engaging the audience's kind of response to it there in the moment. With this, it gives you a lot more freedom to do different things that you can never do in front of an audience. I'm not saying either medium is better, I'm just saying it's different, and that's good. It's good that we see different. That is good. Variety is good. WWE, for me, wrestling, sorry, at its best is when it's a variety show. AEW at different points has absolutely nailed this with loads of different kinds of wrestling, whilst WWE has its own style, but then it also had on top of that its own production style. So not only was the wrestling very similar, the production was also identical throughout the entire show. There was no mixing it up really or anything, and it was just kind of just bleh for a long period. Now the new production team comes in with loads of new ideas, but after a certain point, that's not enough. New ideas were great in the initial Triple H kind of time. We've got used to the new rhythm now. There's the new way that they start all of these shows. Everybody, like, they walk you into the arena. That's something that I'm a really big fan of. I like all of that stuff. But also, you got to keep trying out new things. Now, the audience will get used to it, and then no longer is that like a thing to take note of. This is like the next big thing for me. We're taking what they kind of learned from the cinematic stuff they've done in the past, and then seeing what AEW doing with their character stuff. And this is something that AEW hasn't done, but they've transitioned, as I was saying, a promo that would just be two people talking in front of the live crowd in the middle of the ring, taking that and putting a swell of production around it. So let's talk about it. This Atlanta, Georgia field is where Roman Reigns played his football. This is his field. Cody putting in that Atlanta, Georgia, though, is his home, reminding us of their beef and priming us for a future third title encounter down the line. I said it months ago, but I've got a feeling they're doing Cody Roman 3. Roman, cutting to the point, they took Jimmy, they took my wise man, they took the Ulafala. Like, just in this format, you're able to have lines that just wouldn't work in front of a live crowd, but in a properly edited recording, like, it's a perfect medium for it. Like, with Cody saying, take a look around WWE right now. We have a tribal chief. It's not you. We have a WWE champion. It's not you. So if you can't beat your own bloodline, who's standing here right now? I'll tell you who. It's not the biggest box office attraction in the history of WWE. It's not that guaranteed WrestleMania main eventer. It's the guy they used to call Roman Reigns. Like, delivering that in an arena waiting for the pop would have taken so much away from the delivery needed to sell it. Obviously, I didn't deliver it as well as Cody. This format absolutely works for it. It's one that leans into it. Obviously, you can use the editing and the camera work and everything just to make sure that you're focused.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health. their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today. If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Chris is right there, but also not playing for any crowd, not looking for any reaction, not responding to anything. Just literally everything right there is focused on making sure that it all works into making sure the lines that Cody is saying are the most important thing. So what does Cody want? He wants, Roman's word, that the super team, I don't know what they're calling each other, but that's what they offer me, modern day mega powers or something, the super team will have each other's back. Roman making it clear once this is done, he'll be taking that championship back. And a really nice kind of production, like really nice blocking for me, where, pardon the pun, Cody blocking his exit in such a manner that I saw folk on Twitter excited for the man's eventual Homelander heel run. It's like, we're here again. We've gone full circle. Where straight up WWE fans are like, oh, you just see the little Homelander notes in him. It'd be such a good heel. It's like, happening again. It's happening again. The notes are just automatic. It's like, it's the fact that it happened in AEW and the exact same thing is happening in WWE is quite hilarious. But I don't know, the fans are kind of clamoring for it, like at some point. Oh, I just love that it's happening again. I find that quite funny. Such a perfect final line delivery from Roman Reigns. You're in my way. Cody steps aside. You're in my way. In life. Cue dramatic music. He walks away with the big epic, you know, the big epic dramatic music playing as we have the big crane shot. Or probably just a drone shot. Let's not get they don't have that big a budget. Drone shot flying away. So then transition back into the arena. The production did have a weird mix of reality TV techniques to emphasise the drama and importance, like we saw with him delivering the line and then the music starts to play and the drone shot kind of lifts up in the air. That is very reality television. You will see that on The Traitors. It's very reality TV. In tow with the cinematic feel to the way the actual conversation was blocked and shot, like I was talking about with the You're In My Way stuff. Like, we'll just stress that this is all fine. I just found it interesting that with WWE's kind of mixing of reality backing on itself, technically a mixture of reality TV techniques and cinematic techniques is absolutely perfect for WWE. I just found that interesting that maybe not even on purpose, stuff that they just thought would work and be cool, it ends up being a mixture of those techniques. Also, a really nice transition to Kevin Owens afterwards too. Staying focused after the ad break as well, as he's the face we see when we return. Instead of like Apollo coming out, commentary trying to shift gears from the video we just seen, ad break, then Kevin Owens, And then Apollo's opponent comes out. It's like, no, that's the production that I got used to and I absolutely hated it. This was, video happens. Kevin Owens is reacting to it. Ad break. Kevin Owens is still reacting to it. Then Apollo moves on to his match. It's like, oh, it's far better. It's so much better. It's like you've been soaking in what you've just watched with Kevin Owens. Like, he's kind of your conduit for that. And him talking to Byron is just an absolute perfect way just to kind of feed that through, emotion through onto the show. Like, they thought about this shit. And it's appreciated. And it's noted. That's the biggest takeaway for me that I've really noticed in the build-up to WrestleMania. It's not just production that's better. It's production that's been thought about in terms of what is the production actually telling you. They muck it up sometimes. They're still sometimes accidentally telling you something that they really didn't mean to be telling you. It's all stuff that most people don't mention. It's the kind of shit like if an editor quails on, do I transition at 37 seconds or 38 seconds, and he'll spend ages thinking about it, making sure it's right. Like, most people watching the show aren't going to notice, but he's thought about it, so you don't have to. With the gunshot, it's literally just a picture of a... Do I ruin gunshots of people? A gunshot in a movie is literally that you'll get a little... You know, like the bang in the comics? We get like a little bright white light. You basically get a picture like that. Like, you're in the editing studio, you put that over the gun, and you try and time it perfectly with the sound. So you'll move it about, and it can be quite fiddly trying to get it correct, but once it's right, it looks brilliant. It looks so good. When you've got it right, when you absolutely nail its placement, it's like, oh, yes. The effort was worth it. But then you watch the film, and I guess most people just watch a gunfight and go, pow, pow, pow. Most people don't watch the gunfight and go, the editor's done a really good job placing those flashes. Like, no, people don't say that. That's not how it works. But basically what I mean is WWE are thinking about this stuff. They're thinking about, well, their emotions after, not just thinking about the emotions of the video and how do you have the commentators react to it. It's, well, how are the viewers reacting to it? And they thought about it, and they fed that through Kevin Owens. Like, really smart production. Really smart. Yeah, and the reaction to this video was really strong. It was really, really good. Yeah, I'm just happy to see this kind of thing with this much thought put into it be on the WTV. Later on, we then did get Kevin Owens and DIY set up to face the Bloodline in the main event. But DIY were attacked backstage, so instead we just get the Street Profits. KO, when they saw the Bloodline walking up the stage, he just swiftly walked up the ramp to meet the lads, and that was excellently memed into a San Andreas, ah shit, here we go again, because it was framed almost like a mirror shot. It was over his shoulder, he's walking up the ramp, and it's going up towards them. I don't know how much they meant that, but it's amazing that it kind of worked that way. But the match itself was a perfectly fine, all right, telly main, hitting on the story that KO has never pinned any member of the Bloodline, and that ain't changing tonight. The ref called for a DQ as the match swung into the loose, more brawly affair that's kind of commonplace tag breakdown flow in other companies, but here it's a DQ, which maybe contradicts of what something happens on Raw as well. Just don't think about it. Like, these kind of tag team matches, when they break down and kick off like this, it's an exciting flow. That's why AEW do it. Perfect for their party tag team matches. But WWE need a reason to end the wrestling match and swing into the actual story they want to tell. So there we go. The Bloodline took out the Profits and Kevin Owens on the announce table to raise their wands. DIY's save was easily just like, nah, piss off. With the Canadian, the one taking all of the offense. And it's Cody Rhodes who gets the big save pop. Cody cusses his Fatu, sending them off into a lovely setup for the exact same camera shot we saw in Berlin. KO holding the chair, teasing, turning prize fighter on the champion. Cody and Roman got a focus. Cody and the Bloodline continued with that focus. We ended on a nice little reminder that the champion's got other stories going on. So, elsewhere on SmackDown, because of course I spent time talking about Vince, they kicked off the show with LA Knight defeating Andrade. It's like, yeah, it was perfectly alright. The crowd is so behind LA Knight at the moment. The Tornado Tag number one contender, Lever, leaves Smackers. Nia Jax and Tiffany Stratton versus Bayley and Naomi. In the end, you got a bit of a schmoz finish. I guess we had, throughout the match, we're having like little builds up of like, can they still be friends with the title opportunity on the line? You saw a little bit of tension as one would go for the cover. It's kind of like, but I want the title opportunity, which kind of causes that little bit of tension. But Nia Jax and Tiffany Stratton aren't exactly on the same page either, even though they're aligned on kind of this, but they know ultimately this friendship cannot last. We've got lots of at the same time spots. Be it tag partners going for the same pin, or Nia hitting a Brett's rope leg drop at the same time as Bayley in the opposite corner hitting an elbow. Also, a hell of a counter for Naomi as she got out of Jax's powerbomb by landing on her ass in a leg split, driving Jax's head down with an X-Factor. Actually a pretty awesome spot too. I really enjoyed that one. But it was building to a somewhat screwy finish, with both Bayley and Naomi pinning the champion. But our man Aldis sorted that out with a singles match next week. Last week I was talking about how it was nice that they just didn't go straight into the singles match and actually did a tag match with consequences, but it seems like they found a way to get around no consequences happening and going into the tag match anyway. But you know, because this week happened, it means the singles match is more interesting than it would have been if it was just a straight singles match. So Yeah, it worked. It was somewhat hokey WWE booking, but no, it worked. It worked. Also, I did like them opening the show with Fatu beating up security for having the audacity to scan and search the bloodline upon entry. I did touch on it earlier, but Apollo Crews got to wrestle Giovanni Vici again in the latter's I Wasn't Ready rematch. An actual match this time. But we're seeing what Vinci is really capable of. Yeah, but I don't care because he's a big loser. Don't care. And that was emphasised again this week. SmackDown, absolutely fine. Continuing to build up to Bad Blood. We've got one more show to go. Anyway, let's jump on over to the Ontario Toyota Arena for Monday night.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
American Giant makes great clothing. T-shirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
A match that generally caught me off guard. The Intercontinental Championship Bron Breakker versus Jey Uso in the main event. Yep, this caught me by surprise. Like, just when I'd gotten used to the Trip's big show booking rhythm. Like, hey, goes and spoils it all by doing something like Jey Uso winning the IC title on Breakker's second defence. Did not see this coming. There was 15 minutes left on the show at the ring of the bell, and I was sat there somewhat hoping that didn't mean 5 was going to be reserved for an interference beatdown angle or something. Boy, was I happy just to see them just generally give us that time and give it the title match room to breathe and play out. Jey Uso, so incredibly over. And to be fair, what they're doing with Breakker is working really well for me. Like, he's a beast that we can all see is destined for the top. But they're nailing the hurdles in front of him so he never feels too overpowered. Like, we can believe his rise without it being like, oh my god, he's undefeatable. It's like, no, he's still a beast in the ring. But if he can overcome these things, then he can become a star. Like, type of booking, which is really working for me. It's what you do with, like, when you actually want to be invested in the lad long term or something. It's not just pushing him straight to the top because you want him to be our guy. It's like, no, we want to be invested long term, so we'll give you reasons. You're going to watch him climb rather than just watch him soar to the top and then be the next big thing immediately. The pattern flowing that Jey just kept refusing to stay down. Bron didn't account for his opponent's offense as his charging lariat instead got met with a spear of Jey's own, leading to an awesome near fall off the splash. The finish was the exact same thing again. Breakker just refusing to acknowledge that Jey Uso's built off reversals for charges. So when he charged around ringside again, this time he was met with a super kick and a spear through the barricade. Then finally, finish off with a second splash, 1-2-3. Jey Uso is the new Intercontinental Champion. One hell of a pop for Uso's win. What it also does for Breakker, I'm a big fan of. They've kind of conditioned me to pay attention to why he loses, which is good. Like, when he loses, it's something he's done, and it's something that he can then improve upon and be better the next time he has a match or whatever. You know, actual character growth. Just gotten used to it not existing, so when it's there, it's like, oh, that's nice. For the Judgment Day, we'll just quickly go through that. They're all now set for Bad Blood. We've got Finn versus Priest and Liv versus Ripley both set, but this week was the Dominic Mysterio aspect being confirmed. Ripley out to confirm she's cleared for the title match and that Dom will be behind bars again, hanging above the ring in a shark cage. Oh no. Also an awesome headbutt from Ripley just to crash down Liv. A medium like, The Aussie badass is getting the upper hand before the pay-per-view. She's not winning, is she? Like, oh no. It's going to be some form of screwy thing. Whenever the good guys have the upper hand before the pay-per-view, it's time to worry. It's like, oh. Also, we have a new WWE 2K24 DLC pack coming out. So not only is it free on PlayStation Plus, so more people as possible can have the game to buy said DLC pack, but also Carlito faced Dragon Lee, two new guys to the packs. Carlito with Dom and McDonut by his side, but unfortunately the LWO also had friends at ringside, and Rey Mysterio came down just to make sure they definitely got the win. So a bad week for the Judgment Day. Gunter and Sami Zayn continue with their build to the world title match. Sami faced Ludwig Kaiser in what I've started to call the opening banger spot after the opening promo, but it's normally the spot where, like, Sheamus and the lads have been using this, like, post-opening promo slot to just have a wrestle, and here they put Sami Zayn there. The champion himself came out after the match, decking his wrestling underpants, or as a wrestling commentator put it, he looks dressed for combat. Fine. Properly teasing the title match, telling Sammy this is the perfect place for a title defense, making it an even more perfect place to tell him, pregnant pause, no, then just leaving. I love that. I thought it was really well done. Speaking of other things I thought was well done, Drew McIntyre came up to cut a promo, obviously, on his match with CM Punk that's coming up. We're all set for Hell in a Cell. It's also just dawning on me that I think 2008 was the last time we had a Hell in a Cell match built up to, rather than it just being that time of year, because we got a whole slew of gimmick pay-per-views like Tables, Ladders and Chairs, Extreme Rules. Hell in a Cell was one of them, so when it got to October or November, wherever it was on the schedule, suddenly it's just time for Hell in a Cell, so you're gonna get Hell in a Cell matches. It just meant it felt very unnatural to get built to a Hell in a Cell, so the animosity within there just wasn't there for them. Sometimes they did decently to build up to it, but it was always that vibe of, oh, it's that time of the month. Okay, that's why we're getting to that. It's one of my criticisms with Blood and Guts in AEW, is a similar thing. Like, oh, it's that time of year, so we build to it. So that as it becomes more of like a staple part of the schedule, it feels like a less natural reason to be doing the match. Hell in a Cell had that as well. Also, WWE going PG just made the match just, at least with Blood and Guts, because it's not PG, you still somewhat get excited and you expect something to be happening in those matches. Hell in a Cell, kind of, when it became PG, it's like, ah, it's not much to it. It's like, whatever. However, here, they've taken all the gimmick pay-per-views away. It's specifically being built up to. We haven't seen a Hell in a Cell match in WWE in quite some time. Like, it really means so much more with them scrapping those types of pay-per-views. Earn the match rather than it just being October. Also, I did like Drew promising pain, true promising blood. Well, as much as you can do in a PG setting, but the seriousness is appreciated. Also, let's finally jump into the other notes. A quick one first, where this was the first show I noticed that they now put the city they're under the WWE USA logo. So that's nice. And just a nice little touch. Braun Strowman and Bronson Reed, they just broke more shit. Really enjoyed them using the usual arena walk-ins to catch us off guard with the two charging big lads across the screen. Liv and Dom just like, all right then. So did that. Reed then later had a match booked with Miz. Before the match, Strowman launching from the crowd and into a big second big boy brawl. Awesome visuals with the cameras going, oh, what's going on? Kind of crazy. Fighting off security as commentary calls the mountains of men. Teasing a top rope suplex as methinks we're building towards a big ring break spot. Hey, it's been a while. At least they're actually building to it rather than just doing it. They tease, oh, what's going to happen if he suplexes him? Then you don't give it them. You actually tease doing it. Speaking of stuff being built up to, Kofi and Xavier Woods tying their tensions as a team together with their win-loss record. Like, yay, wins and losses actually mattering. I am now fine with this storyline. Especially now that it's just not flavour in a never-ending carrying cross undercard feud. They faced a reinvigorated American maid, Woods dressed in all black as he's not feeling the colourful positivity messaging of the New Day right now. Kofi enjoyed the hot tag, but Woods didn't enjoy Gable's interference, taking his anger out on the American mentor rather than the men in the ring, eating a big Brutus ball for his lost temper. Speaking of tags, the women's tag team title scene got the second hour post-Drew promo slot. It's like, okay, right in the lull. A shame given like how these women are putting on great matches each week, but the show around it is telling you they're not that important. It's like, ah, sucks. They go to social media and you watch a clip. It's like, no, it's great. You watch it on the show. It's just kind of like, this is like a lull spot. This doesn't matter. And that's a shame. This week, the Unholy Union faced Damage Control again. It was good again. What wasn't good was the Fusion Collective, the Gillette Fusion Collective, whatever they're called. They had a little VDR video play, and it was generic as hell. Like, every single part of this group just feels not that interesting or thought out. The lines are generic, the production around it's generic. It's like, whatever. But yeah, overall, Monday Night War, again, continuing to bad blood. Pay-per-view that I'm more interested in because it feels like it's got a different vibe to the normal WWE pay-per-views. As long as they lean into that, they can do something a little bit different. In the arena of the night, just create a vibe. Create a vibe of you're going to see a lot of feuds playing out here. Like, it's all about the bad blood between the competitors. I like that in the 90s, where the names of the pay-per-views kind of more lent into a vibe than a gimmick. And yeah, I like that. I'm happy to see that come back. But anyway, that is the end of the review. I'm very happy I've kept my original recording to the length that it has. I've only got a certain amount of time of energy and whatever. Still recovering from COVID. I'm pretty slow. I tire so easily. There's quite an aftermath kick to this bloody thing. But anyway, yes, please, if I get this out before too late on Friday, please, 6 p.m. EST, going live with a special, very special announcement for the Social Suplex Podcast Network. And if it comes out afterwards, hopefully you enjoyed the announcement. That's all I can say. Also, we are planning to do something fun. So, and seeing everybody interact is going to be quite a rare sight. We talk together all the time, you know, just not in front of you guys. Please do check out that once in a lifetime experience. I beat it up too much. Shit. Dial it back. Dial it back. Oh, get ready for a perfectly fine show. That'll be all right. You know, you might enjoy it. It'll be okay. And it's 11 PM UK time, so, you know, it's not too late. I'm saying thank you for the time as an Englishman. Anyway, with that, I say thank you for listening, liking, engaging in any form, any manner. Always appreciate it. Never take it for granted. I'll be back this time next week. And with that, bid you adieu. Adios.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly! Auto Parts.